Hello, and welcome to Revolutionize Your Love Life. Do you want to know more about love relationships, what makes them work, how to create the one of your best dreams? Do you want to be in a really healthy, juicy love relationship? In these podcasts, we will give ideas and practical advice to light your way. Whether you're looking for a love partner, already in a relationship you wish could be better, or leaving one that has run its course, there will be something to inspire, empower, and support you. Revolutionize Your Love Life is a fortnightly podcast where you will access the knowledge and wisdom of love experts and relationship coaches from across the world to help you find true fulfillment in love. I am your host, Heather Garbutt. Welcome. Hello, I'm here today with Alison March. She's the founder of The Group Hug, which is the community for people going through divorce, separation, and life beyond. She's going to tell us her story and how she came to form The Group Hug. Alison, very much welcome to you.
Hi, Heather. It's really nice to speak to you.
Can you tell me a little bit about what was happening in your marriage? Because that's the where all of this begins, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. So I got married back in 2003. We moved to Belgium with his job, so I'd sort of given up my job in recruitment. Then we came back and he was started to work for his family. So really over the years, I found that the family were really sort of able to control what we were doing in our everyday lives, really, from, you know, holidays to where we lived, what we were doing with the children. And because ultimately that's where the money came from. I think it can be really difficult for people working in family businesses. And I've heard similar things with people, you know, who are living in farming communities and that kind of thing. If it's sort of a family trust, going into that can be really tricky.
So you sort of lose your autonomy.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. Because, you know, you need money to get on with what you want to do in life. And if that's coming from family, I think it can be really tricky if it's not handled properly. So it was really difficult just to not really have any real independence. And I suppose I always felt like, I don't want to go to the Princess Diana thing, but there was always like other people in the marriage, which was really, I found really difficult, yeah.
So there was his family exerting control over what you could and couldn't do, all of your choices, really.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, I remember we'd go on holiday. I'd be told to turn the television off if a family member was being spoken to, so they couldn't hear that a foreign TV in the background and know we were on holiday, that kind of thing. It was pretty weird. And I just remember trying to reason with myself that I had to just get over it, I suppose, and deal with it. But then as time went on and we had the children, I found it more and more suffocating, I suppose. Yeah, it was just not the way I'd been brought up. You know, my dad, mum and dad both worked and they were independent of their families. You know, their parents when they were in their 40s and 50s weren't controlling what they did. My mum and dad chose where to go on holiday, what to do with us, days out. But it was all sort of really tricky and suffocating.
Mm. So how did it affect you? What were you feeling when all of that was going on? Suffocating is the strongest word. Tell me everything else.
Just frustrated, I suppose, at not being able to do what we wanted and having to lie. Hearing someone else lying to their family. You know, I'm not a liar, and I just found that really strange. I don't lie to my family. It just seemed, it was just one big web of lies, and you have to be careful. I mean, they lived abroad, but you have to be really careful what you said to them when you did see them, in case you let anything slip. I remember once I put on Facebook that we were on a ski holiday, and his sister tracked us down to the ski resort we were at, and the hotel manager contacted my ex-husband, and he just went into a panic because his sister had found out that we were on holiday, because I put it on Facebook. I mean, yeah, it was just bonkers. And then he had this massive row and argument with them because we were on holiday. It was just, yeah, that kind of stuff when you're in your 40s was just really strange. And that incident happened probably, that might have been the last real holiday went on. I think it might have been sort of one of the straws that was breaking the camel's back, so to speak, that sort of, you know, an alarm bell was going off thinking this is seriously weird.
So you were beginning really to get a full grasp of the sort of power and control relationship that you were in with the family.
Yeah.
That was definitely sort of entangled in your relationship with your ex-husband as well.
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, little things happen and they build up and build up and build up to make a bigger picture that eventually I think you can just explode and think, what is going on? I think that's what happened to me. Well, it is what happened, yeah. All the little pieces of the jigsaw gradually over the years came into a big picture, which became very clear.
Right, yeah. It dawned on you, yeah.
Yeah, it dawned on me, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting because if you're in power and control relationships, the amount of gaslighting that can go on, you know, denying your reality is so very, very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It takes something, you know, like a cataclysm, like that big argument. Mm-hmm. To be clear.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Is that the only thing that made you decide to leave? What were the other things that really pushed that choice to leave?
Yeah, just, I suppose, he was never on my side, never fought my corner. They always came first because they were the providers of our life and marriage. So I just always felt like an outsider, really. And you know, he'd get really, really frustrated when things weren't going his way. And that just wasn't pleasant to live with. You know, you're dealing with the consequences of what he's going through. So because he's really angry and cross with them for something, I'm living with him and getting the brunt of it.
Right. So you got scapegoated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you put the phone down after arguing with them. I mean, sometimes the arguments with them would go on for hours. And then I'd have to deal with that. I'd get the brunt of it.
That's really awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's emotionally battering, I think. The whole thing sounds emotionally battering.
Yeah, it was.
So how did you leave and what were the consequences?
I literally had that light bulb moment that some people have. I just remember I'd started my own business. It was called the Pop-Up Deli. It was like an Italian food business, and I had people doing Italian food parties around the country, and it grew really quickly and it was doing really well. And well, I know now that I don't think he was getting some his wages or whatever funding from his family. It was really messing up my business. I mean, he never said that, I don't know for sure, but there was something going on with money for certain, and that was all getting messed up. And I think because I'd seen what I was capable of, you know, I'd been really a successful recruitment consultant years before. And I think I kind of found myself again. I knew that I could run this business and I felt like empowered. So that was in the December, sort of November, December time. I was just really enjoying working and being independent and earning my own money. And then I think that mixed with the constant interference on the family. One day I just remember it was in May 2016. I remember working and I could hear him sort of shouting over the upstairs. And I just stood up from the desk and I said, that's it. The marriage is over. You've got to go. You've got to leave. It's over. That is it. And that was it. I just hadn't thought about it as such that I was going to do it on that day. It just happened.
Yeah.
And I knew that that was it. That was the end. I wasn't going back.
Mm.
It was over.
It's amazing how sometimes that happens, isn't it? You just have that cataclysm. Yeah. This far and no further.
Yeah. You know, it is like a light bulb. It's like a big burst of energy that is it. Yeah.
Mm. You can see.
I can't take any more.
You can't take any more. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So how did you leave? And you asked him to leave, and did he go? And was that okay?
Yeah, he went. I mean, it was all very, very dramatic. But yeah, he did go. I think he came back the next day, and it was dramatic for, you know, got to two children. So of course they were upset. And yes, it was all just very, very dramatic because I don't think he thought I would ever do it. You know, he always said, if you ever leave me, I will make sure you don't get any money out of me, or, you know, you'll be in hell. You'll go to hell, I swear. So, yeah.
That's terrifying.
Mm.
Very binding.
Yeah.
Were there consequences for your mental health on that? You mentioned night terrors and things.
Yeah, no, I was having night terrors actually throughout, well, probably the last 6 years of the marriage. I'd wake up in the middle of the night thinking that I'd swallowed my own earrings. It would always be sharp objects, or it could be paper clips or needles. And I'd wake up choking. And now I look back, I realise that that was my body telling me that actually I was suffocating. Isn't that weird? Like, you know, how your body can tell you that something's not right. I didn't realise that at the time, but yeah, that is definitely my body. Because after he'd gone, I never ever had one of those incidents again. And I'd have them on holiday, I'd have them, and I wonder whether I was having them on sometimes on holiday because I suppose this web of lies probably, and being worried that we had to switch the TV off so they couldn't hear we were abroad, or, you know, that kind of thing. Suffocating.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm putting together, you know, with my psychotherapy hat on, is that you had been swallowing so much stuff, you know, so much negativity, so many sharp words, so many subtle attacks and not so subtle emotional attacks.
Yeah.
And that you were choking on it.
Yeah.
It's the suffocation that comes from choking and the battle to get it out of your system. Mm. And it's like your unconscious was laying you a path. Look, you've got to get out of here. This is killing you.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's really interesting how your body reacts to things going on in your head. I mean, I remember being on holiday in Italy and being really embarrassed next day because I'd woken up really screaming loudly. I must have thought I was being murdered in the room. I'd have to go down for breakfast the next day, and I've just been having one of these night terrors.
Mm-hmm.
Screaming so loudly.
Gosh, wow.
Yeah.
There's part of you really just didn't want to lie down and take it. You know, part of you was really rising up and it was coming out in the night.
Yeah. In my, what would you say, subconscious.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible.
So from leaving all of that and then the night terrors and processing all of that, what did you learn? What did you become?
Well, when I was having those night terrors, I actually went to see a therapist. So I had cognitive behavioural therapy.
Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah, I'd read an article in the Daily Mail about Benjamin Fry, and he's big into that. And I think he'd been like a male model. If you read his story, I think you can Google this article, but that led me, things he said sort of led me to thinking, gosh, that therapy sounds amazing. So I've managed to find something. I don't think it was very easy for me to find someone that did that at the time. But having that led me to sort of realising that there were things in my life that weren't going well. So it was that therapy that I suppose ultimately, a couple of years later, led to me saying, it's this that's wrong. It's this life I'm living which is wrong. It's not doing me any favours. So, yeah, I just became more honest with myself and identified what my head was saying to my body, I suppose. Yeah.
Mm, brilliant. So everything was unfolding.
Yeah.
Clearer.
Yeah, definitely. So, I'm just a big believer in now, in, you know, if there's anything your body's telling you, go and see someone about it, have some therapy, because just helped you to take the time to listen to what your body's telling you, what your head's telling you. Mm. It was so busy in everyday life sometimes that we don't actually sort of sit back and think, what is going on?
No, I get concerned about that too. You know, how many of us are just popping an ibuprofen or a paracetamol because we've got a headache again, you know, rather than thinking, why is my head busting?
I never thought about that. Yeah, headaches. I mean, you know, so many people popping, like you say, paracetamol. Why are they getting those headaches? Is there something else?
Yeah, what level of tension?
Not the night terror, does it? Mm. Mm.
And upset stomachs are another classic for me. Anyway, we won't digress into that. Tell us where you are in your life now.
Oh, just at peace, really, I suppose. Just working. I've just thrown myself into this new business. Well, not new, it's a couple of years old now, but just thrown myself into it. And I just love that. I don't even feel like it's work. It's just, you know, speaking to interesting people, talking about their lives. I feel like I'm helping people because I'm signposting people to experts such as yourself who can help them. And I hope that in the future I can inspire people to see that there is a life after getting divorced. You know, it's not the end. It can be horrific to go through the process of getting divorced or separating from a relationship. But you have to just try and stay positive, and then you can move into a new life. There is a new life out there if you want it. But you've got to find it and grab hold of it and make it. It's not just going to happen. And there's no point in playing a victim. Being in victim mode is just so disabling.
Yeah. I love that. It's very clearly put. This is why you and I are doing this today, because same page, you know, the conscious uncoupling stuff really fits into this. I want people to have a happy even after.
Yeah. You know, I grew up in the 70s, loved Enid Blyton and fairy tales, and I probably thought I was marrying my Prince Charming, you know, super charming, because that's how I was brought up, you know, the princess marries the prince. That's what we were probably all looking for, but it doesn't always happen. Sometimes the princess has to get divorced.
They do.
And carve out a new life, and that's what you have to do. You have to carve it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And the story that you've told for you, I hear time and again, that women have got untold resources inside themselves that emerge as a consequence of leaving a relationship. It may not even have been as difficult as yours, but just stifling or restrictive in some way. Or just run its course, that they no longer belong together, that it's emptied out, you know, whatever they started off with.
Yeah. With the children, we were left homeless. I mean, I remember going to the local council officers and they said, declared us homeless. I had no credit rating because I'd been left in loads of debt. I had to go to the job centre. I remember taking, you know, school holidays and having to take them with me to the job centre. And one of them was ill and going to this chemist across the road from the job centre. And there was a guy in there getting, was it methadone for her? Yeah, getting that, and the boys seeing that. And I was on benefits for about a year, I suppose, maybe a year and a half trying to find a job and all the rest of it. So, but then, you know, I look back and now I understand what it's like for people to be, but there was no way I was going to stay on benefits. No way. So I set up, I was doing some sort of virtual PA work and I just put notes on Facebook saying, anybody wants some help with anything I can help? And actually from that, just putting out those posts, I think people thought, oh wow, she's actually doing that. It's really good. Oh, we'll hire her to do some stuff for us because she's obviously got a bit of get up and go. And I was never afraid to tell people what I'd been through. This is not embarrassing, it's just what happened to me. And I hope that I've shown the children that it's a positive role model, that whatever life throws at you, you have to be resilient and just bounce back. You have to, not just sit there. There's no way I was going to be in that victim mode of just, you know, getting benefits and not making something of myself. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're really compelled. Yeah. So tell us a lot more about the group hug then.
Yeah, so when I was going through this sort of, it was probably about 3 months after I started the divorce proceedings, I realised that a lot of people I thought were my friends sort of dropped off, so they weren't real friends. And I just set up a tongue-in-cheek group called the Ascot and Sunny Hill First Wives Club. And within a few weeks, I had a lot of women join who were also going through tough times. And we meet for coffee and sometimes meet in the evening just to have a chat. And basically it was a lot of women just saying how awful their ex-husbands were being at that time. And it started from there. So then when I finished with all the divorce stuff and I just walked away from it all, people were saying to me, oh, you know, that group you set up local is really good. So I tried to set up some mini sort of first wives club hubs across the country, but soon realised that I was ending up in Facebook jail often for posting too much. So I set up one of those Wix websites myself, just built that myself. So that was something else I learned to do. And then that grew. And then I went to a company to do a sort of rebrand because the First Wives Club is a Paramount film, so I might end up in trouble with that, yeah. And I wanted to include men as well because men go through really tough times, so they might not always speak about it as much as women, although I think they are getting better, especially with lockdown and people being through. Men's mental health has come out a bit more. So we came up with the group hug and going from strength to strength. So we have lots of experts in what we call the hug directory. So counsellors, coaches, family law firms, will writers, financial planners, anybody who can help you get through the tough time you're having and into a new life. So expert advice. You know, if someone needs counselling, they can find someone in the local area or whatever. So, yeah, we've built up a network of professionals who can help people get through the tough times because you can't always do it by yourself. I did it by myself, but I didn't. I mean, if I hadn't had that therapy, I wouldn't be where I am today. And if I hadn't spoken to the expert at the job centre, you know, there's all those people in your life that do help you along the way. And I had legal aid for the divorce, so I did have a solicitor in the end. So yeah, you do need some help. Even if you're just reading a book about a subject, you need some kind of help to get you through, an expert, just to give their opinion and advice.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I think it is, when there's a lot of emotion going on, which there always is when you split up, then you really do need people around you to support you with that, to keep you clear-headed, so that you're not making decisions from that emotional base, so you come from a position of more adult clarity.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, writing really long emotional emails to your solicitor, and I guess everybody does that. Your solicitor's not there to deal with that. You should get somebody else to deal with the emotional side of it and help you out with that kind of thing. So your solicitor can just do what they're there to do, which is deal with the legals and not have to read through reams of emotional emails about what you think about your ex or whatever. So I'm hoping, and I can see that we are carving that out in the group hug and saying, you know, this person does this, this person does that, this person does this. So get a little team of people together, your sort of divorce toolbox, I suppose, so to help you through if you need that help.
That's wonderful. And obviously they're tried and tested people, so that you choose them, you know, which is so nice to feel. Because, you know, there's a plethora of people out there you could choose and you've no idea if they're any good. But if they're on your site, we all know that they've come through you, that you've had a conversation with them and or used them yourself or have experience with them.
We never want to be a listings, so we only have so many experts per area because you just said about your head being can get really full, your mental bandwidth. I just remember you sometimes can't, especially if it's legal stuff, you can't get your head around it because your head is so full of other stuff. There's no space to actually learn anything new or find out what that word legal term means. So it's good just to have somebody to to tell you what to do next or advise you.
Just take all that pressure off. Yeah, and the other thing for me is that what we don't realize, particularly, you know, since we've been in the pandemic, is parts of our brains are used to handle the panic, the underlying panic of that, because, you know, we're in times where we're off our map. We've never been here before.
No.
And there's a lot of anxiety. So you can't think with the front of your brain because the blood's gone to the back ready to fight and fly, you know. And that happens when you're divorcing too, when you're separating out. So learning those terms, the chances of learning very much when you're that stressed, it's minimal.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. It's a very difficult thing to go through. And we do speak to everybody who's in the directory. Somebody asked me a couple of weeks ago, how do you get such great people in the directory? And I said, well, I think that it's just because if they actually get what the group hug's all about, then they tend to be really nice people if they just get what it is. So I think we naturally sort of attract really good people as well. Yeah. Lucky.
That's brilliant. I don't think it's luck. I think it's who you are. What you're drawing towards you because of what you're giving out.
Oh, that's nice.
So is there anything else you would advise people, you know, to do or to seek from your experience? Is there anything else that crops up in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that I see people is that victim thing. Just don't do it. Or, you know, they might be fighting over the smallest thing. I mean, I've even heard stories, you know, fighting over the cutlery or fighting over, and just, I mean, I walked away with nothing in the end. I just couldn't that whole fight. I just wanted to get on with my life. And I know some people, I've heard stories of people 15 years, you know, waiting for the money to come through, and it's blocked them. So they haven't been able to move on. And by that time, the children have grown up. You miss out on so much. So pick your fights, I suppose. And look at, is it really important? Is it coming from an emotional level or do you really need it? Because if you don't, even down to the family pet, you know, if you're arguing over it, is it worth it?
Mm.
Is it really worth it? And if not, just move on with your life.
Yeah, don't waste your life looking back and fighting. Face forwards and go forwards.
Yeah. And it's that whole thing, isn't it? You could get run over by a bus tomorrow. It's that, actually. You just got to move on.
Yeah, that's lovely. That's a beautiful place to end. But tell us, please, how we contact you, how we find the group hug.
Yeah, so we've got an amazing website, which is at www.thegrouphug.com. And then there's all the contact information on there if you want to get in touch. And we've got a live chat button that comes up as well, so you can chat to us live during sort of office hours, if there's something you want to deal with at the moment, if you've got something pressing matter, then we can signpost you to an appropriate expert. And then there's lots of blogs and information on the site as well. So
it's brilliant. It's such a wonderful resource. I can't recommend it highly enough. Thank you so much, Alison March, for sharing all of this with us today.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for all the work you do with people as well, because you know, it's people like you and experts like you that help to show people the way.
Thank you. Thank you. I love doing it. And like you, it doesn't feel like a job.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life. I'd like to know what has been your biggest takeaway from this conversation. Do take a minute and share this with us and visit us on our Facebook page. You can connect with me personally on my email at heather@heathergarbutt.com. If you can think of someone who will benefit from listening to this podcast, please do share it with them. If you have any feedback on how I can improve it, please do reach out to me, as I'm always keen to learn more. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll meet again on the next episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life.